Quran Quest. Yes, please. Quran Quest, answering your Quranic questions.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. To all the brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to iRabi English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The program is Quran Quest, where we examine the chapters and verses of the Quran and extract its teachings with our dear and beloved, always good looking, Brother Habib. Salaam alaikum, Brother Habib. How are you doing? Thanks for being with us.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So we're on chapter 78 of the Quran, Surah An-Naba. An-Naba means a big message, an important news.
Yes.
Very, very important news. Let's listen to verses 1 to 10, and we'll be back for the rest of the discussion. Don't go away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeeb. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ألم نجعل الأرض مهادا.
Have we not made the earth a resting place?
والجبال أوتادا.
And the mountains as stakes. And we created you in pairs. And made your sleep a means for rest.
وَجَعَلْنَا اللَّيْلَ لِبَاسًا
and made the night as clothing.
You're back on iRibe English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Quran Quest, and you just listened to verses 1 to 10 of chapter 78, Surah An-Naba, which is the great message, a very important news. It's also been translated actually as the tiding. We said that by tiding there are two interpretations. One of it is a day of judgment, and that the people had a dispute among themselves about what the resurrection is like. You said that some people believed it would be physical, some people believed it would be spiritual, and some people didn't believe that there's anything after life. And then you also said that there's a second interpretation, which is Walayat Amir al-Mu'min alayhi salam, which the people disputed about, and that you favored this interpretation more. In verses 4 and 5 it says, nay, but they will know, that indeed they will know. Two interesting things. First of all, it's emphasizing that there will come a time when they'll know and they'll see the truth. And secondly, it uses the word kella, which is never. Never ever. It's a very strong never.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. See, the Holy Quran is very beautiful in its way of speaking. The Arabic language is very beautiful. See, look, you can read it like this. See, we read it like أَمَّا يَتَسَأَلُونَ عَنَ النَّبَأِ الْعَظِيمِ. What are they asking each other about? You can read it like this. What are they questioning each other about?
Uh-huh.
About the great tiding? The one about which they differ? No, indeed. They will soon know. Again, no, indeed. They will soon know.
The tone is very important in understanding the message.
The tone is very important, yeah. I maybe my tone was kind of wrong, you know, because I can't scream in the radio. But if I could scream, you know, it would be more more emphasized.
More realistic?
You'll believe the emphasize on it more, but I can't scream here.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah. But we get the message, right? That was a very interesting way to...
Yeah, so here, see, we have this a lot during our lives. I don't know why we don't pay attention to it. Those linguistics usually pay attention to it. Those who have, you know, body language thingy-majingy studies, they usually pay attention to this. And the way that the Quran is talking, they're in denial about it. They are differing about it. There's going to come a time where they're going to know. there is going to come a time where they know. On the first interpretation, it means during the Day of Judgment, when they arise again. And on the second interpretation, is when they are they're going to be asked in their graves by Munkar and Nakir, the two angels that ask them, who is your Lord? Who is your Prophet? What is your book? What is your Qibla, your direction you pray towards? Who did you give allegiance to?
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue the discussion. Don't go away.
إن سألتم عن إلهي فهو رحمن رحيم أنزل الشارع حنيفا رحمة للعالمين رحمة للعالمين.
This is Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio. It's a program that attempts to answer your questions pertaining to the Noble Quran. We'd be delighted to have your comments about the program. Just search Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me who my God is, on whose name I call, if you ask me who my God is, He's the God of us all, Allah the Merciful. If you ask me what my book is that I hold in my hand, if you ask me what my book is, it's the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The program is Quran Quest, and we are on chapter 78 of the Quran. We're right now on verses 4 and 5. Something interesting comes to my mind here. Brother Habib, verses 4 and 5 are saying, nay, but they will know. Then indeed they will know. The tone here is threatening. It's threatening them of punishment. Does this imply that they knew what the truth was and yet they disputed about it?
Its signs were available. The needed evidence to prove it was available. Yes, it does give out that. Thank you very much for pointing that out. I wasn't paying attention to that. Thank you very much. That's the importance of good questions, ladies and gentlemen.
It's continuing. The verses are continuing to give the signs that you just talked about. Did we not make the earth a resting place?
See here, it's not saying that these are the signs for proving, the Day of Judgment on the first interpretation or the allegiance of, or the need of allegiance on the second interpretation. But rather, it's showing you that on the first interpretation, it's stating that...
Which is the Day of Judgment.
No. Which is the Day of Judgment. Rather, it's stating that the person who is made the Day of Resurrection possible and is almighty of creating these blessings that we will talk about. For the second interpretation, one can say what? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a Lord. What does a Lord do? He organizes things and raises people for their perfection. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is our Rabb. What is the meaning of Rabb? We talked about this in Surah An-Nas. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created these laws and orders, these physics, the ones that Newton discovered when an apple hit his head during the plague. These laws of physics, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created them in a manner that human beings reach their creation. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created all these that we're going to talk about for a cause, for a reason. Therefore, He is a Rabb. He is a Lord. The meaning of this, that He arranges things. All right, how can He arrange for humanity? How can He arrange for humanity to reach perfection without there being someone or something, an authority to go back to when they are in ignorance?
Let me make a conclusion. Let me put everything that you're saying in another way. In the next few verses, God is pointing out to some of the things that He's done. Did we not make the earth a resting place, the mountain stakes, create you in pairs, make your sleep repose, make the night a garment, the day for livelihood? Did we not build above you seven firmaments and make a radiant lamp? And it goes on and on. And what you're saying is that God is pointing out to all of these signs to say that, look, I created this entire platform for you to reach perfection. Would this entire thing be of any use if I don't appoint a successor for the Prophet for when he's gone? That is the conclusion that you're
yes,
to get.
Yes. That's very, very beautifully put. Thank you very much for summarizing this idea that I have. Now, this is kind of like the story of Hisham ibn al-Hakam, one of the great companions of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, also the companions of Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. He's highly debated about after the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, whether he is a trustworthy person or not, because there is a la'an or a curse that was available in the books of Rijal by Glyphal Evolution. We'll leave that later out. But when he was an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, long story short, he goes to debate with one of the biggest scholars in Al-Basra. He goes in there because he was a famous name, even at his young age. He makes himself as a young person that is not known and everything. And the scholar is talking, this big sheikh, this old scholar is talking and giving out his ideas and whatnot. Hisham ibn al-Hakam comes and asks a question. He tells him, I want to ask a question. He says, tafadhal, go ahead. He tells him, can you see? The scholar says, what nonsense question is this? Yes, I can see. What do you want? He says, can you feel? He says, yes, I can feel. Can you smell? Yes, I can smell. Can you hear? Yes, I can hear. All right. But if they fall into doubt, if they go wrong.
If they stop working.
If they work wrong. If they fall into doubt, they have.
If they fail.
If they fail. What do you use? Where do you go back to? He says, to my intellect, to my brain. He says, ajab.
Or how surprising.
How surprising. You, a human being, return to your mind, your intellect. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who created all human beings with all the chances to fall into misconceptions and doubts and whatnot. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has not placed an authority for them. Do we not need an authority to go back to ask when we fall into doubt and misconceptions about our religion?
When all else fails, we need an authority that
we need
can
that divine
handle.
Knowledge. We need that divine knowledge. And this saying is very beautiful. It's very long. It's available in Al-Kafi, second chapter. Go ahead and review it. There's English interpretations and translations for it. And just ponder about it. In reality, yes. How can we reach perfection? That's the greatness of the allegiance of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. When we say we are aligned with Amir al-Mu'mineen, that means we take our knowledge, our religion from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. When we're not aligned with Amir al-Mu'mineen, we don't take our religion from him. We see him as someone else, as some scholar.
Instead, we take that religion from people who do not have the credibility, the knowledge,
exactly.
Or
the divine authority.
The divine authority. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Habib. We're just going to take a short break now, and we'll be back to further the discussion. Don't go away.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Quran Quest. Let's go through the verses of chapter 78 one by one, starting from verse 6. And God here is showing some of his signs, some of the things that he has done for us. Verse 6 says, did we not make the earth a resting place?
So it starts off by saying how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has equipped human beings on the path towards perfection. And it starts off with the first thing. When you have gravity, you need a place to walk on. When you have, for example, plants and fruits that you want to grow, you have to have soil that's capable of being what? Ready for you to grow. I think that the translators, what do you have here in the translation in front of you, my brother?
Did we not make the earth a resting place?
I also have this, but I think that it might have been translated in a better manner. أَلَنْ نَجْعَلْ الْأَرْضَ مِهَادًا. Mihada comes from something that equips.
Equipped.
It makes it ready.
It has the stuff that you need.
Like, fil mahdi sabiyya, right? And like the cradle. Like when we have this figurative language, we say that the child is in he's in his mother's hands. That's the translation of fil mahdi sabiyya, for example. So it's because why? They're going to raise him. They're going to make him ready for this world. He's going to grow between their hands with their embrace. And so the same thing with the earth. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made this earth, this soil, not too hard where you cannot dig up and plant seeds, for example, to grow your vegetables and livelihood and livestock and whatnot. Nor is it too soft where we fall into it. Rather, it's in a perfect precision. It's in a manner, in a state where it's not like quicksand, you fall into it and you just, you know, can't get out and you get stuck. Nor is it in a manner that's too hard that you can't grow your livestock, the plants, the trees, the fruits that you need for your daily life matters. So that's the first thing. For example, just look at this blessing. That pay attention to this blessing. We see it every day. Just pay attention. If it was in a different manner, it would be very difficult to cooperate with.
Okay, and the next verse says, and the mountains stakes. I think we can come up with a better translation than that.
The meaning that the interpreter state of Al-Awtad is that because the mountains go down, right? They stable the earth, let's say.
They have of a the root. Equators, every mountain has a root.
So the layers and the craters of the earth, I only studied elementary school about this stuff. I'm very sorry. I went to house in a very young age. I don't know about this stuff. But they taught us about how earthquakes happen and how mountains play a role in them. Also, when the wind hits, if there was no mountains, the wind would be super, you know...
Very strong.
Very strong on us, and it would hurt.
So mountains have a protective role for us.
Even though I'm not a geologist, I'm very sorry about that. I wish I was, because it's very nice to know the miracles of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
If you want to do that, you have to have a whole lot of specialists.
Yes.
Expertise.
Yes. But Arabs used to know this stuff, because they were living in this.
Okay, thank you very much, Brother Habib. It's always nice talking to you. Good point, actually. Unfortunately, one of our problems nowadays is the lack of reading books. And the very low attention that we have nowadays because of all this mobile phone and stuff. Anyway, that's all the time that we have, I'm afraid. You were listening to IRIB English Radio broadcasting from Iran. The show was Quran Quest. You can always download an archive of this episode and all our previous episodes from our website. Simply search IRIB English Radio Quran Quest. Until next episode, Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1953. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying. Stopping by and listening to street musicians usually changes our mood for the rest of the day. The experience would be different if one lies under the instrument while it's played, and that's what a pianist in America has done. Colin Huggins, a busker, wheels his grand piano more than half a mile from a mini storage to New York's Washington Square Park. He lets people lie down under the instrument and feel the vibrations from the keys in their bodies. Colin says he wants to help people recover emotionally from the intense disconnect they had faced during COVID-19 lockdowns.
I've always wanted to accommodate feelings in the best way possible, and I wanted to do it with music, and this is the best way I figure out how to do it. Maybe someday I'll figure out a way to do it even better, and I won't need to push this piano here, but as of now, this is the best I've got.
New York was one of the hardest hit cities by COVID-19 in the U.S. Like other places, the major city imposed lockdowns and tough curbs to contain the disease. Despite that, Colin continued playing on the streets, frequently to an audience of zero. He says he strongly believes that everything will be all right. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Kololangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. It replaces the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. While some drivers are obsessed with the speed, some others have a passion for the look of their cars. In Tehran, car tuning lovers have assembled for the biggest show of modified vehicles. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
Fast and furious. It's the biggest show of personal cars turned SUVs. Held in Tehran's Island Karting Track, the event brought together more than 500 motorists to flaunt their modified cars.
This is the only place where car tuning lovers can vent their energy and show off their beautiful cars. When I saw the call for such a big assembly of modified vehicles, I didn't waste a moment and decided to bring my car here.
Exhausts sound deeper, with flames popping out. Sound systems rattle the car roofs. And regular doors are replaced by butterfly doors, opening upward. To these people, car tuning is more than a hobby, but a passion. Majid says he has spent double the price of this Peugeot 206 to turn it into a green beast.
For us, our cars mean everything. To me, it's love. I save whatever I earn to spend on my car. So I urge the police to respect this love and stop fining us when we roll with our cars on the streets.
Based on Iran's traffic regulations, drivers are not allowed to alter the original design of their cars. Installing loudspeakers and noisy exhaust systems, and even attaching stickers, are associated with fines. Omid says he can't take this. He has transformed his Iranian-made car, dubbed Rana, into a whole new model, saying it looks better now on the street.
I spent whatever I could afford to make the streets look better with our cars, but the police are treating us like we are wrongdoers. I myself oppose dangerous driving in the city. What I want is just to make my car look more attractive.
Car tuning encompasses any modification to a vehicle that would lead to a higher engine performance and dynamic handling of the car. As long as these people stick to these rules, police will not have issues. Otherwise, they must keep these beauties inside their parking lots.
Thank you. However eye-catching they are, these mutated cars are no longer road pets and are good for drifting on tracks like this. Organizers say that's exactly why they held this show, to provide a chance for car-tuning maniacs to vent their energy in a safe place. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news and more from every corner of the world.
The third long-duration team of astronauts launched by SpaceX to the International Space Station ISS for NASA safely departed the orbiting outpost to begin their descent back to Earth, capping a six-month science mission. Live video showing the capsule drifting away from the station as the two vehicles soared high over Australia was shown on a NASA webcast. Wearing helmeted white and black spacesuits, the four astronauts were seen strapped into the crew cabin shortly before the spacecraft separated from the station, orbiting some 400 kilometers above the Earth. NASA said one of the cosmonauts, Oleg Artemyev, assumed command of the ISS from Marsburn in the handover before Thursday's undocking.
And I relinquish control of the or command of the space station to you.
I accept command. I accept command. Thank you for here. Thank you for friendship. It was unbelievable time to get.
If all goes smoothly, the Crew Dragon craft dubbed Endurance will parachute into the sea off the coast of Florida on Friday. Their departure came about a week after they welcomed their replacement team aboard the station, also currently home to three Russian cosmonauts on a long-term mission. Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCop Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCop Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCop games. It's the first time I am involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCop seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCop competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCop Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCop. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCop is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
There is a lot to be worried about when it comes to the climate. An Indian auto rickshaw driver in the capital, New Delhi, has come up with an innovative idea to beat the scorching heat wave. He has built a garden on the roof of his vehicle to keep passengers cool. Mahendra Kumar's vehicle, dubbed Moving Garden, stands out among others, with its unique rooftop. He has grown vegetables, flowers, and a variety of herbs and shrubs on the small roof space. Kumar says it was easy to make the garden by spreading a thick sack over a mat and covering it with soil. Then he added the plants, watered them, and watched them grow.
Around 2 years ago, I had this idea during the peak of the summer season. I thought if I can grow some plants on the roof, it will keep my auto rickshaw cool and give relief from the heat to my passengers.
Kuma says the thick green keeps his three-wheeler cool even when temperatures reach 45 degrees Celsius. The rickshaw driver has also installed small fans inside for the comfort of passengers as an extra measure. His passengers say they feel cool because of the natural air conditioner. Kumar's rickshaw attracts many commuters for obvious reasons, and passers-by also stop to take selfies.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. There have been so many people during the history of religion who respected religious and divine values during some years of their lives. However, they went astray and they become cruel and atrocious. One example is Abdul Malik al-Marwan, who was known as the pigeon of the mosque. He was at first a devoted person who spent his life in worshipping and reciting the Quran. In a day, he was informed that his father, Marwan al-Hakam, passed away, and from now on, you are the king and ruler. Upon hearing this news, he became happy, and this was the start for his deviation. When Abdul Malik al-Marwan heard that he became the king, he closed the Holy Quran and said, "From now on, there is no friendship between me and you." After a while, Abdul Malik al-Marwan was changed into a cruel man who killed so many people. He started drinking wine and doing malicious deeds. This is how committing sins and the love for dunya or mundane world change the people and darkens their souls and minds. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, neighbors. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of neighbors in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings and Islamic texts for the Islamic lifestyle, we see that there is a lot of emphasis on the neighbors and the relation that we need to have with neighbors. We can see that people sometimes do have a good relation with their neighbors, and this relation is so close that even they look more closer than the other relatives. They're more closer than to brothers. And this is something good, because when we are living at a place and we have some people living around us, if we have a good bond with them, if we have a good relation with them, then obviously we can have a happy life. And a life without any trouble, a life without any hassle. Why? It is only and only because of having good neighbors, having good relation with the neighbors and helping each other. I remember that in back home, like Eastern countries, we used to give something which they needed, and whenever we needed, they used to send something to us. For example, if suddenly we had a guest, or maybe we did not have the onions, or maybe like a meat or anything to cook a food, we used to quickly jump onto the next house and ask the neighbors, and they used to help us. And similarly, when they had some kind of situation where they used to need us, we used to, cooperate with them. We used to help them. And this was a good relation. It shows that, you know, we are living in a town, we are living in a place, in a street, where we have neighbors, but we all are one. We are not separate from each other, and we are very close to each other. And this makes life easy for everyone, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of neighbors, and we said that having a good neighbors is the good thing. And in the back home, I remember that we had a good relation with our neighbors. But on the other hand, unfortunately, with the Western civilization that we see, with the lifestyle that we see, with the mentality that is being injected to the people, that you should not interfere in the other's matters, and whatever is happening, it's for them. Even unfortunately, if in a society, in a Western culture, if some kind of crime happens, people avoid calling the police. Why? Because it's not their matter, and they should not interfere into the matters of the others. So these kind of thinkings has made us getting away and away from each other. Even the neighbors who are supposed to help each other, who are supposed to provide security to each other, who are supposed to be companions and having a good relation with each other, they who are supposed to have such a relation, they are getting away from each other. In today's lifestyle, we do not know who's living next door. We do not know, for example, in the apartments, if you're living in a building, you don't know who's living in the second floor or third floor. And this is very bad, that when we do not know about each other, we never help each other. We never have a good relation with each other. And this brings farness into the people. This brings overruling the rights of the people. And especially when Islam gives importance to the neighborhood, then we need to be very much careful and have a good relation with our neighbors, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Midstream.
On May 15, the Lebanese people will hit the poll stations to elect a new parliament, which will be conducted according to the proportional electoral law, with 103 lists competing in 15 districts. The political forces that formulated the electoral law in 2017 find it the best possible law to preserve what they call Lebanon's uniqueness, referring to its sectarian, regional, and political balances. On the other hand, legal experts criticize the law not only because it divides Lebanon into small sectarian units, but also because its architecture was in the interest of the wealthy and powerful. According to the text of the law, each constituency has been allocated a number of parliamentary seats, the least of which is 5 and the maximum of 13 seats, to fill 128 seats in the Lebanese parliament. This geographical division of the districts is not based on an understandable scientific basis, but rather on a sectarian basis that notes only the sectarian demographic distribution of the Lebanese in these districts. The elections are presented by the Islamic sects of the Sunnis, Shia, Alawites, and Druze, the Christian sects of the Greek Catholic Maronites, Greek Orthodox, Evangelical Armenians, Catholics, and Armenian Orthodox. The most problematic notion in the electoral law is its adoption of a single preferential vote within a single list, meaning the voter chooses one candidate within the list of which he voted in, giving him his preferential vote, provided that the candidate is exclusively from the smallest electorate. This vote is ordinal, meaning if the list gets three seats, it is distributed to the first three who got the highest preferential vote percentage on the list. The electoral quotient is then calculated based on the number of voters in each district, divided by the number of its seats. For example, if the number of voters in a district reaches 100,000 actual voters and the district includes 10 seats, the result will be 10,000 votes, meaning that each list in the electorate must get 10,000 votes in order to qualify for the competition for the seats assigned to it. Otherwise, it will be considered a loser. Adopting such a law results in low expectations of changing the political system that governs Lebanon, especially since the state of political realms in the country always revolves in the orbit of Hezbollah, rather than adopting actual progressive electoral campaigns that benefits the crisis-stricken country. American-funded NGOs and pro-Western factions still fail to comprehend that the exclusion of Hezbollah from the political scene in Lebanon is a fantasy, especially that Hezbollah on many occasions presented economic projects and development solutions, as well as equations that would put an end to corruption in Lebanon, which makes Hezbollah in any electoral battle a difficult contender that cannot be ignored. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Lebanon is preparing to go to the polls on May 15. Many observers believe that this parliamentary election promises to be one of the most significant in the country's modern history. In connection with the developments taking place in the regional and international arenas, it is necessary to approach the elections in Lebanon from a perspective different from that found on mainstream media. It is crucial to look at the context of the Lebanese elections away from the slogans of the candidates and rather approach the situation from the regional connection of the majority of these candidates. This indicates that Lebanon will not be able to bypass its elections dilemma and swim away from the regional and international agendas that restrict the Lebanese national option. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, member of the Lebanese parliament from the Loyalty to the Resistance Bloc and also candidate in the upcoming May 15 elections. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Moussaoui, and all the best of luck in your journey. Now, with the start of the countdown until May 15, Lebanon is looking at a group of influencing factors between political fragmentation and possibly clashes and the tightening of sectarian nerves at every corner in the country. What does the electoral arena look like in the last days before the polls open for the residents of the crisis-stricken country?
Just like what you have mentioned, Dr. Marwa, we know very well that the situation is always like that when it comes to the elections, even if you have a kind of calmness or pause at a certain level in the country. When it comes to the elections, there would be, or we would witness a kind of escalation in the political speeches and discourses and in the positions of the different political parties, the different factions, and between the antagonistic approaches to the country. Now, just like what you have mentioned in your introduction, Lebanon is passing a very critical time in its modern history. Yes, true, this is very true, because the things that are interconnected, intermingled between what's local, what's regional, what's international, is adding up to the escalation and is culminating the events in such a way as to make more exacerbation of the situation, if I may say so. The thing is that the arena is very interconnected here in Lebanon and in the regional issue. It has never been precedented before that things were so connected to this point. It has never been precedented before that the international, so-called international forces here, we say, namely the United States of America and its allies in the regional level and its, say, proxies in the local arena here in Lebanon, they have never coordinated more than they do now in order to make the results come boil down to their own interests. Why is that? Because we in Lebanon have witnessed a different ways of approaching the arena. The Americans, the Israelis, have waged wars, they have done assassinations, they have done everything possible in order to subjugate the will of the resistance and the axis of the resistance and the Lebanon and Lebanon, the free Lebanese people who would really want to see a sovereign country without being annexed to this level or to that level, that has purely patriotic, that has purely domestic interests. Those who are in the other position, in the other camp, they want to subjugate Lebanon during these elections. And we know very well that hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent. We know very well that some of the diplomats, the Gulf diplomats, namely the Saudi ambassador and others, and this is very clear, this is very open, they are doing everything possible in order to gain in politics, in elections, what they were not able to do during the battlefield or during the Takfiri war or during the Israeli invasions. Well, so that's why it's very sensitive.
This is very important here, especially the last part of what you just said, Dr. Moussaoui, because Saudi media is pressuring continuously former Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri, who literally just quit Lebanese politics and left. They are calling him for a massive participation in the polls, despite the fact that they did not support him. And Saudi media launched an attack on him as a head of the Future Movement bloc in Lebanon because he refused their request to take part in this propaganda campaign. Now, is this true, as has been said in the Saudi Uqaz daily, that claimed that the Sunni vote will be dispersed as Hariri supporters will abstain from voting, which will lead the Sunni seat to go to the allies of Hezbollah? And if so, why is that such a panicking point for Saudi Arabia?
Well, this is true to a large extent, actually, because the Saudi politics and the Saudi positions have never been wise enough as to understand the sensitivities of the region and the sensitivities of the local arena. They want to subjugate everyone to their will and determination. Whatever happens to this emir or that emir, they want to see their approaches and their views being put into implementation. What happened with Saad al-Hariri, simply, he never accepted to go into a kind of fitna in the country, that a kind of civil strife or civil battle between the different factions. He never accepted to take the dictations of the Saudis as is. He has done everything possible in order to come and make a new rapprochement with the Saudi politics, but they never accepted him. We know very well that this is a kind of revenge. This is not real political approach by the Saudis. It's a kind of revenge, it's a kind of reprisal to what they think that should be done, because the Saudis, they should order and everyone else should obey. When we look into what the Saudis are doing in the region, especially in Yemen, we see very well that they are not looking after their own interests. What happened after this seven-year war in Yemen? There are devastating blows to the Saudis on different levels, economic, military, political. And we know very well that they are not accepting to be a little bit modest and to come and review their military and their political positions in Yemen and in other places. The same happened with Iraq. The same happened in Syria. So this is a total chaotic position for the Saudis. And I don't think that Saad al-Hariri in this position, I really say that he was wise enough as not to accept to be dictated by the Saudis, not to engulf his own country and his own people with another fitna.
Well,
with
there's
the
still time for that. We're going to have to wait and see. Maybe he might just fall through within the
So far, we are, look, but, I mean, but, the pressure, just like what you said, the pressure is mounting, but
I'm saying this,
we've been
hopes. Because the campaigns of the foes, your foes, Hezbollah's foes, in this electoral process, or the days before the electoral polls stations open, is basically just anti-Hezbollah.
Very true.
The desires of many pro-American parties is to exclude your party, Hezbollah, from the political scene under various pretexts. How is Hezbollah preparing for this political battle?
Well, to tell you, this is their dreams and they are nightmares, actually. This is wishful thinking. I mean, when we talk about Hezbollah, you're talking about a real big, large, deeply entrenched formula in the politics, in the matrix of the socio-political scene in Lebanon. You're not talking here about a mere or ordinary political party. You're talking about a whole resistance that has been able to produce an axis of resistance, not only in Lebanon, to give a kind of steadfastness, a kind of immunity to Lebanon, but a kind of equation or formula that is ready and is capable of not only defending Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Iraq, and other places. That's why, I mean, those who are pinning their hopes, and you see, this is very funny, actually. We laugh at those who say that they want to disarm Hezbollah. I mean, when the international forces, when the United States of America, when their proxy Israel, they couldn't do it. Those who are giving promises to their electoral, those who are going to elect them, that we want to disarm Hezbollah, I mean, this is something that could be only said as words. I believe we are going to be into to witness another scene after the elections. Mm-hmm. All those who are giving promises, false promises, fake hopes to their allies. By the way, the Lebanese people and the Lebanese, if you want, supporters of those political parties are wiser than the politicians themselves. This is pure rhetorics, heated rhetorics that is not going to boil into any kind of real results.
Well, let's hope that the next time we see you, Dr. Moussaoui, you would be again a member of parliament for the Loyalty to the Resistance party.
I can assure you, anyone who is in the list of the resistance, we are going to prevail, we are going to win.
Inshallah, good luck for you and your party as well. Thank you very much, Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, member of the Lebanese parliament from the Loyalty to the Resistance bloc, Hezbollah, and a candidate in the upcoming May 15 elections. Thank you for your time. Now stay tuned, because next we are going to discuss how Al-Quds is igniting the internal occupied territories.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
A few hours after Zionist Israelis stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque commemorating the so-called independence of the occupation, the native Palestinian response came in the Elad east of Tel Aviv, where two Palestinian resistance fighters carried out a commando operation that killed four Israelis and seriously wounded four others. A process that demonstrates the effectiveness of the resistance reliance on the efforts of Al-Quds, the West Bank, and the occupied 1948 interior in confronting the occupation's plan aimed at the full Judaization of Al-Aqsa. This was clearly evident in the Hamas movement's adoption of the operation, considering it a practical application of what the Gaza factions had warned of, that Al-Aqsa is a red line. While it seems clear that the resistance does not believe that such an operation will rush the war in the Gaza Strip, since it has been clear in its threats, considering that any response to what is happening in Al-Quds should not be traditional and emotional, but rather in line with the context of the ongoing Palestinian uprising. Resistance hits Tel Aviv again in this following report.
Thursday, May 5, nearly passed quietly despite hundreds of settlers storming the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque, before the evening hours brought the news of an unexpected resistance operation. One or two young Palestinian men managed to kill three settlers and injure six others in the settlement of Elad, east of Tel Aviv, an event that complicates the Israeli security calculations and the assumptions in front of the expected Palestinian reaction, not only in terms of the tool used in implementation, but also in terms of geography. The days leading up to Thursday bore the harbingers of an imminent round of escalation, based on the threat of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar in Gaza, in which he stressed that the spectacle of the army and settlers storming the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque must not be repeated. Sinwar had confirmed in his speech before Eid al-Fitr that the battle of the Al-Aqsa Mosque will not end with the end of Ramadan, but will rather begin with its end. In his speech, he called on the Palestinian people to prepare for a major battle if the occupation did not stop attacking Al-Aqsa, stressing that the enemy wants to turn the battle into a religious one, and we are for it and accepted the challenge. Sinwar called on all resistance factions in the Gaza Strip to be prepared and ready. Since Thursday morning, the number of settlers who entered the courtyards of Al-Aqsa reached 792. However, it was noted that the Israeli police were keen to pass the event with a controlled level of provocation. Social media pioneer